With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name is Jay. I occasionally write blogs on DesignFootball.com. Today I'm joined by Les Motherby, who is one of the contributors to the Amber Nectar podcast and blog, and of most interest to us, the WholeCityKits.co.uk website. Hi Les, how are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
So, two questions, and they may be intertwined, but why Hull City and why Kits?
Okay, well, I'm from Hull. You tend not to support Hull City if you're not. And my father is a Hull City fan. He moved my family near to Boothry Park before I was born so he could make it very easy for him to go. And like the first thing I saw when I opened my curtains in the morning was the six freestanding pylon floodlights at Boothry Park. My father took me when I was 6 years old, and so I was indoctrinated, really. I've never been one for supporting a team that's local to you, just on TV or like in Match and Shoot magazine, as it was then. I didn't want to support Liverpool or Manchester United. I wanted a team I could go watch. So it's been Hull City for me ever since.
Okay, and there's obviously ups and downs that are related to supporting a team like Hull City.
Well, I mean, we spent 19 years in Division 4, so the greater proportion of my supporting life has been in the basement division. So it's mostly been nadirs, quite frankly. although, looking back on it, I really enjoyed those periods, and some of the most misery has come from the actions of people running the club during the Premier League era. So, you know, you spend all of your life wanting Hull City to achieve something, and they get to the Premier League and suddenly you're unhappy with certain things about the way the club's presented. So that's a strange one I never anticipated.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, I suppose.
Indeed. I mean, in terms of Kits, I mean, I've always been obsessive about the aesthetics of football, you know, everything from stadium design, floodlight design, club crests, and so colours and kits are, you know, I always think a kit is the club's most prominent visual identifier, so that's always been foremost of that love of the aesthetics of the game.
And do you think supporting Hull specifically has helped with that, has helped cultivate that, in that are they a special club when it comes to football kits, or are you not going to be objective enough to know?
I think I'm objective enough to know. I certainly know when a Hull City kit stinks, and I know when there's a good one. I like the fact that we're not a typical red or blue team. Amber and black isn't a colourway that you see many teams use, and I quite like that. I like that when we're in the Premier League, our kit mix is very distinct. So that's something I've always been pleased with.
Yeah, so immediately we're sort of drawn to the elephant in the room, which is the tiger print kit, the famous tiger print kit. This is the thing that confuses me, because there's a big movement at the minute to not allow Hull City to become Hull City Tigers or Hull Tigers. But that kit, that's one of the most famous kits, and I think it's probably a kit that you would accept as being a great kit for Hull, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's iconic. And you have to remember, at the time, we were a middling third-tier club, and that kit got us nationwide and even worldwide publicity at a time when there wasn't much to smile about. So I sort of recognise the kit's kitsch value, and I'm fond of it for that. But that's not to say I'd ever want us to do it ever again. I think those kind of while designs were best left in the 90s. And whereas most clubs were doing outrageous designs, they were mostly doing it with their away kit. We was one of the few teams that sort of let their imaginations run riot with a home kit. But I certainly would prefer it to stay in the past.
So just explain, if you can, what's going on with the whole city name. Because I'm sure a couple of years ago, I think maybe in the last stint when you were in the Premier League, were you actually officially called Hull City Tigers for a while?
No, we've never been called that. I'll give you a bit of context, because the owner likes to tell people it's because so we can market the club in Asia, but it's a sham, really. When Assam Allen bought the club, he's got no interest in football, and having been in a room with him for 4 hours while he rambled on about stuff, he's got no knowledge of football whatsoever. What interested him was, he thought he could get hold of the ground, and he thought he could get hold of the land surrounding the ground so that he could build some kind of tacky shopping centre. And he genuinely believed if he bought the club and said, hey, look, I'm the saviour of Hull City, the local council were going to give him a municipally built stadium for nothing. And because they basically wouldn't entertain it, he thought, right, I'm not having Hull City Council get any kind of reflected glory from Hull City being in the Premier League, so I won't call them Hull City anymore. And that's when he hatched his idea to call them Hull Tigers. So although later he added the line that we think this would make us billions of pounds because everybody in Asia is so gullible they have to buy stuff with tigers on, that's, if you live locally, you realise that's not the real reason for it.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of DesireFootball.com. So that's very interesting. So that's why, when you say, from the outside, I don't necessarily see it as a big problem. I'm behind you in feeling that way. But for me, the name wouldn't be such a tragedy, because I always think of that kit, and the nickname is so tied to the football club in such a bigger way than with other football clubs, because Liverpool shirts don't have like wings on the back and so on for the Liver Bird, that kind of thing. So there's no, there doesn't seem for me to be the same tie-in as there is with Hull City. But I wouldn't argue with you on this one. This is, I fully understand your strength of feeling on this. So you say that shirt, and what seasons was that shirt around?
That was brought in for the 1992-93 season.
Okay, and it was just that one season that they wore it?
No, there was a strange thing happened with this kit, because we'd been with Matchwinner for quite some time, and then the relationship with Matchwinner irreparably broke down in the summer of 1993, and it's probably because the club didn't pay Matchwinner, because that kind of thing happened all the time back in the early 90s, because the club was forever cap in hand trying to stave off winding up orders for unpaid tax bills and the like. And I think Matchwinner just basically says, well, we're not supplying you any more kits. Now, it really bugs me when people say the Matchwinner Tiger Stripe shirt is the worst shirt of all time, because it's not even the worst Hull City shirt of all time. The follow-up shirt is the worst Hull City shirt of all time, because the club approached Pallada and said, can you make us a non-Matchwinner copyright violating approximation of Tiger Stripes? Now, it took them a while to do this, and so we started the 93-94 season wearing the Matchwinner kits, but with a new sponsor's logo plastered over, but also the Matchwinner logos were very unsubtly covered by stickers with Pallada's logo on, which, you know, you can't imagine any brand would have been happy with that nowadays. There'd be lawsuits. But it wasn't until you're looking at the December or January of the 93-94 season that Pallada had shirts of their own. So what we would do is we started the season wearing Matchwinner shirts, but wearing Pallada shorts and socks. And then at the end of 93 and the start of 94, we broke out this abomination, which so it didn't violate the copyright. They made the print much tighter and much smaller, and rather than stripes they were almost circles. So firstly, it looked more leopard spot something Betlin should wear in Coronation Street than it did Tiger Stripe. But the other thing, the effect of having the design be so tight was the further you got away from it, the less amber it looked. And it had like a copper rusty hue to it if you were 10 metres away from it. And that was really shown when Oxford United came to Boothroyd Park and wore their home kit at Boothroyd Park, because their yellow shirts weren't deemed a clash with our supposedly amber and black shirts, because it basically didn't look amber and black. It was just a copper-hued mess.
Now, I'm trying to think of this shirt that you're describing. I remember one that had a huge black square sponsor that said something like Threadless or something. What?
It was Needless Sweets.
Needless.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So the first season we started wearing match winner kits, we were sponsored by a local nightclub called Pepe's. The funny story about that is, I've got a friend who was he wrote the student newspaper at Manchester University, and he once interviewed the Beastie Boys wearing a Pallada Pepe-sponsored football shirt, and he managed to convince them that Hull City were actually sponsored by Pepsi, but that's what they called it in the UK.
But is that Pepys? Is that the spelling of Samuel Pepys? Is that the same spelling?
No, it's got an I rather than a Y.
Okay.
But that sponsorship deal only lasted a year, so then we needed another sponsor for the next year, and we got sponsored by a local confectionery company. But the ridiculous thing was, the sheer size of the patches was utterly unnecessary, and you know, a player once said to me, he said, you know, when those patches got wet, they were like heavier than dark matter. They, you know, you could really feel it weighing down the shirt. There was no good reason for the size of that sponsor whatsoever. In fact, I bought a replica off eBay not so long back, and it came with the Needless sponsorship, and I basically just unpicked the stitching and took it off, because you can't walk around with a patch on your, well, I mean, you don't want to wear that shirt anyway, but you certainly don't want one of these huge shield sized Needless Sweets patches.
Okay, so underneath the patch there was nothing then?
Underneath the patch was the previous year sponsor.
Oh, it was okay.
It covered, but even though, you know, the Pepe sponsor wordmark wasn't that big, it certainly didn't need patches three times the size of it to obscure it. So that to me is the worst Hull City kit ever, and it does frustrate me when people pick on the match winner Tiger Stripe shirt, which, you know, in juxtaposition is a masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah, I think West. I don't. You'll remember this, but West Ham did something similar when, I think it was XL Holidays or something went bust, and they put the numbers on the little patch.
Yeah, I did like the fact that they used the Premier League short numbers. That was quite a funny little touch.
Yeah, they look like cross country runners with their entry number on there. So you mentioned there that you talked to the players. Now, this is something you get to do. Now, I've always thought it was something, somehow Hull City Kits, the website, had got all these contacts, but I take it it's from the Amber Nectar website. Is that how you got the contacts with the players?
Yeah, we encourage ex-players, usually ones that were played in Division 4, because often they've got better stories to tell. You know, I mean, what are players that have played in the Premier League going to discuss? They didn't like another player's, the colour of his headphones or what he had on his iPod. I just don't think the stories would be fun. So we like bringing in players when the club was at its lowest ebb, when it was facing relegation to the Conference. And naturally, I always will get some questions in about the kits where I can.
Now, it is a great website, and I think most people listening to this will visit it periodically. And you can extrapolate from it for other clubs, so it's not Hull City specific. There will be I'm sure for every club of that level, I would imagine, there will be a similar story or an equivalent story about what goes on in kitted out the players. So there's certain players that have tear a hole in the back of their socks. So there was a Hull player that did that, and then since then we found out that Gareth Bale does it as well. Is that right?
Yes, Sam Ricketts did it. It's funny, they're both Welsh. I wonder if that's some kind of coincidence. One of the players that came on the podcast was Mark Greaves, who was a local defender, and I had to fess up something to him, because the club was in a parlous state throughout the entire 1990s, and late in the decade, the players were issued two home shirts, two pairs of home shorts and two pairs of socks, one away shirt, shorts and socks, because, you know, you don't often need to wear an away kit when you wear black and amber. So they only got given one set of away kit, and they were essentially told, you know, if your socks rip, you're stitching them up yourself. if you swap your shirt with an opponent, the club will fine you a week's wages, which seemed excessive, you know, for the sake of a £50 shirt and some printing on the back, especially since that season we played Liverpool in the League Cup and we played Chelsea in the FA Cup. So you imagine these players thinking, oh, I really want man swapping shirts with Gustavo Poyet, but I'm not going to pay 700 quid for the privilege when they fine me a week's wages. Well, anyway, I knew the guy who was the stadium announcer, and the club were notorious for not paying players, and they also didn't pay the staff. And there was one day when he was so annoyed that he hadn't been paid, he just went under the West Stand and into the kit room and took a load of shirts out of a dryer. And one of the shirts he swiped was Mark Greaves' away shirt. And he Martin, who was the announcer, gave the shirt to his son, Harry. Now, years later, Harry sold me this shirt, and he was telling me the story about how Martin took his son into the players' bar after one of the games, and there was a really worried Mark Greaves saying, I'm going to get fined a week's wages because they can't find my away shirt, and I haven't done anything for it. And at that point, I pulled out that away shirt and said, oh, here it is, Mark, I'm sorry, but here's the shirt that may have cost you a week's wages. Ah. Ridiculous.
Nice. Now, what? So, who was the manufacturer at the time? Was it Umbro then?
No, that was Avec.
That was Avec. Well, I take it with Avec, the ones that were being sold in the club shop were exactly the same as the ones the players were wearing.
Exactly the same, yeah.
And you know, they get fined that amount of money if they lose the shirt. Well, I suppose, couldn't they lose it and then get it sorted and then not get fined?
Maybe. It was a strange time at the club. I mean, the club got a player signing embargo because they weren't paying wages. At the same time, when the club bought a dilapidated coach from the chairman's company. So, I mean, there was all sorts of nefarious goings on, but they just decided that the players weren't worth a couple more £50 shirts. It was a strange business.
Okay, so during the period that you've been following the club, we mentioned the Tiger Stripe shirt and what's come off the back of that, really. Are there any other favourites that spring to mind that you particularly liked? I'm looking at you now, and you have a backdrop of loads and loads of different Hull City shirts, and very different shirts as well. So even though many of them are the home shirt, they're different styles. So the style changes quite regularly, even if it's not obviously an animal print. It's you will go one season plain and one season striped.
Yeah, that does frustrate me, because to me, Hull City playing stripes, that was where the club got the nickname from in 1904. The local newspaper, the Hull Daily Mail, said, you know, we've got the rugby team, the Robins, and the other rugby team, the Early Birds. Maybe we need another animal analogy in the black and amber striped shirts. Why don't we have the Tigers in it? And it stuck, and the reserve teams became known as the Cubs back then. And it stuck with it. But it does irritate me when we wear plain shirts, because although some of them are nice, say for example the 2009-2010 home shirts, a lovely design, but everything about that kit screamed Wolves. And there was even a time in 2012-13 when Yorkshire Television did an end of season montage of goals, and one of the goals they showed was scored by Wolves, because the people putting the footage together thought, oh, that's Wolves, that's Hull City, we'll get that in as well. And that illustrates to me that, you know, if you own a certain style of kit, you should stick with it. And to me, although I know some clubs have flirted with black and amber stripes now and then, I know Cambridge have done it once or twice, Barnet, but generally we own black and amber stripes. I think that's part of our identity, and I don't think the club takes advantage of that enough, and I think we should regularly wear striped shirts.
Yeah, the amber thing, you mentioned amber quite a lot, and that is quite an important thing, that this is amber and not gold, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I had a Facebook argument with Rich from the Football Attic about this, because he was winding me up by saying it was yellow or it was orange or amber basically is orange, and then he gave the analogy of a traffic light. But I always think the amber of a traffic light is very yellow, so that totally disproved his orange theory.
Mm. Now, I remember one article on Hull City kits that talked about base layers. Now, I'm obsessed with base layers. That's my main thing, which is quite worrying. My main thing of my entire life. But there was one season where you had to have yellow or something, and then you were promised the following season you were going to get the right colour, you were going to get amber base layers. Is that right? Have I got that right?
It is, yeah. It was 2011-12, and yeah, the base layers just were yellow. They weren't amber at all. But Adidas followed up, and they did give us proper shirt matching amber the following season.
Mm. So this is the position that Hull are in, and I've talked about this before on this podcast and probably other podcasts, but you have three tiers, especially for the bigger manufacturers. So you have teams that will get bespoke kits, and then you'll get very low league teams and non-league teams and so on who will have team wear, and then the middle ground is a team which has a team wear template but in bespoke colours. Is that more or less where Hull are, is it?
Yeah, I think so. Although I do think Umbro have done a pretty good job over the last couple of seasons for giving us certainly shirts that, although they may have elements that other teams have, say like a bit of collar design, or generally, I've not seen them produce a kit that you say, oh, that another team wears that as well. Whereas that did happen with Adidas, say, for example, in 2010-11 we had the same template as Stoke, just in black and amber, and in 2011-12 we had the same template as West Brom, just in black and amber. And maybe it's not a bad thing when you're not in the same division, but when you play in that team and you see both kits come up against each other, that it does look a bit, you know, PES or FIFA back in 1996, where there was only one or two designs and everyone had just different colour variations.
Yeah, so we've talked a little bit about Hull should have stripes, but one of my favourite shirts, and I managed to get this into the 50 greatest football shirts ever, is the 2007-08 season shirt. Now, this is like, I don't understand what this is, but I think it fortuitously gave off an element of being bespoke for Hull, because it had these diamond things down the side and they looked like tiger stripes to me. Do you agree, or is that not one of your favourites?
I wouldn't say it's one of my favourites, but you are right. Because it's like a repeated abstract diamond pattern, but it does, on certain glances, look like it's tiger stripes. Yeah, it was a nice kit. I certainly wasn't going to complain about us being given a template kit when we shared that template with England, you know, at the time, coming on the back of many seasons in the lower leagues wearing some really appalling kit mix. Then suddenly having the same template as England didn't seem so bad. I just think it... Although that shirt's certainly remembered because that was our first Wembley appearance made in that. We were promoted to the Premier League in that. So it's memorable for the things that happened in it. I'm just not sure that the shirt itself, I would say that's a classical City shirt. And I was really surprised when you put it in the top 50 kits. You know, even as a Hull City fan, I wouldn't advocate that.
I reckon it doesn't get the props it deserves, because I think the players wore it a size bigger than they should have worn it. If they'd worn it a size smaller, it would have looked just perfection. If you look at the video, I watched it earlier, but the video of is Dean Windass, his news, scores at Wembley. When he scores, it then goes to the crowd, and there's a guy who's, he's not svelte by any means, but he's wearing it a touch tighter. He's slimmer than Dean Windass, but he's wearing it a touch tighter, and it looks great. So you just see this guy celebrating in the crowd, and it's fantastic. So, yeah, check that out, and that's a great shirt, whatever anyone else says.
okay.
Some other Hull shirts that not that I necessarily like, but I noticed a few years ago they were going for crazy money on eBay, are all the ones, I don't know how many seasons it is, but some were sponsored by University of Hull, is that right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now, why are they popular?
I'm not sure they are popular, because the guy who sells those seems a bit coin-eyed and wants lots of money for them. But if you ever look on completed or sold items, nobody ever buys them. Hmm. And this guy's had them on there for 3 years. And that always really frustrates me, because people will contact me via the Hull City Kits Twitter and say, oh, I've got this replica shirt. Do you want to buy it for 300 quid? And basically said, you're having a laugh. It's not worth 50 quid. And they'll say, yeah, but if you look on eBay, they're going for this. And I say, no, they're not going for it. One person is asking that for it. I think some of that comes from having played in Division 4 for 19 years, and then we moved to a new stadium, and then that became the catalyst for moving up the leagues. I think your older fans are going to crave some kind of way of displaying their authenticity, that they've not rocked up since we've been at the stadium, and they've not rocked up since we've been, you know, a contender to play in the Premier League. So I think some of that is they're hoping to take advantage of people who'd grown out the shirt they had at the time, but want some distinguishing shirt that says, yeah, but I was here in 97 when we was bottom of the entire league and we only survived because of Doncaster. So I wonder if that's the thinking by it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sponsorship deal was funny. I talk about the parlous financial situation the club was in the 90s. The club used to use the university's training grounds, and that's where Hull City trained and did all the fitness testing. But we never paid for it, and the university weren't happy that we'd never paid for it, and we owed them in excess of £100,000. So the innovative solution was, well, why don't we just put the University of Hull on our shirts and give you some advertising that way, and that'll cover the £100,000 or however much it is we own you. So we never made any money off the University of Hull thing. And it did amuse me when the University of Hull became our training kit sponsor at the start of this season. So whenever you see a shot of Mike Phelan on the touchlines, you'll see the University of Hull on his training wear. And that just amuses me, given the original deal that we did when they were our sponsors. Back in the late 90s.
Do you think something else is going on again? So they owe them for something else at the minute, and that's payback?
Well, Asa Malam, the owner, is a big contributor to the university, because they gave him an honorary doctorate. So he's sponsored like an auditorium, like a lecture hall, and I think he's putting some money in for something else. So I'm sure the university is grateful and wanted to show that somehow.
Okay. So it's something else I noticed, another shirt that I particularly like, or I like the concept of it, is, again, in the 50 greatest football shirts ever, there was a Corinthian shirt in there, and it had this weird stripe effect where the stripes are dark at the top and then lighter as they go down, and that reverses on both of them. Do you know the shirt I'm thinking of? There's a whole shirt like that, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the 1998-99 kit. It locally, that's known as the Great Escape kit, because the start of that season under player manager Mark Hatley, that was the nearest we ever came to dropping out the leagues, because there was a point at the turn of the year, just before we played Aston Villa in round three of the FA Cup, when they were top of the Premier League and we were bottom of the fourth division, and we were like 6 points adrift at the bottom of the fourth division, and it genuinely looked, you know, we were going to be playing in the conference. I remember the hard copy Amber Nectar fanzine, we asked a Halifax fan to basically say, what's the conference like? Because we're pretty certain we're going to be playing in it the next season. Personally, I hated that kit. I hated it at the time, and I hated it now. But I hate it as a Hull City shirt. I can accept that it's a nice football shirt, but nothing about it says Hull City to me, because I'm not keen on there being so much white in it. I mean, the gradated effect's quite nice, the amber going into white, even though when you get to the middle parts, it looks like somebody spilt Tango on a white bedsheet or something. But I can accept that it's a nice football kit, but I just didn't like white as a bona fide third colour. I think it should be a trim colour.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it that way. So, yeah, it doesn't scream Hull if you... Especially if that's the first shirt you see, and then... Okay, so that brings us up to where we are now. What are your feelings on the current kits?
I think Umbro have done a pretty good job the last couple of years. I thought the one they did for the 2014-15 season was beautiful because it was very reminiscent of what is my favourite Hull City kit ever, which is the 1990 to 1992 shirt. Because I think that got Hull City, the look of Hull City absolutely spot on. It was thin black and amber stripes with plain amber sleeves, so it really brightened up the kit because the 90s one had black shorts and black socks. So I think it's important to get as much amber in as you can and not have the shirt look too dark. I think you've got, when you've got a bright colour like amber, you want to show it off. And I thought the Umbro's 2014-15 shirt, it mimicked that very well, and I thought that was excellent. They followed that up with the shirt that we got promoted in last season. That was a pinstripe shirt, mostly amber. I wish, once again, I'd rather us have stripes. It was a beautiful shirt, and it has my favourite collar style of ever, which is the overlapping V-neck, so I'm pleased we've had one of those in recent history. But it felt very referential to the pinstripe shirt Umbro made us in 2009-2010, and it just seemed, you know, it's only like 6-7 seasons ago. Are you really retroing a shirt that you did not that long ago? I thought that was an odd one. And then there's this season's, because I like the thought processes behind it, because they're making a reference to the kits we wore between 1975 and 1980, where, like in that Great Escape season of reference, we decided to go with white as a full-on third colour, but I thought it was done in a smarter way. So you had thick black and amber stripes with a white V-neck with a flappy white collar, and for the first couple of seasons we wore white shorts and white socks, but later in that run we went back to the black socks. We sort of flipped the home and away shirts, shorts and socks midway through the run, because initially the away kit was white shirts, black shorts, black socks, and so you had interchangeability between the sets. But then at some point we decided to just swap the shorts and socks of the home and away kit with each other, and so this year's kit's referencing that. But the idea's nice, I'm just not keen on the execution, because I'm really not keen on the wishbone shaped collar. I think there are much better, more appropriate collar styles that you could have gone with. But the actual having a white collar, I really like the idea of that. I think that's good. But the worst part for me of this season's kit sets is the shorts and the socks. The shorts is the same for both the home kit and the away kit, and yet it doesn't look as if it matches either, because the black of the shorts doesn't match the black of the shirts, and that's even worse on the away kit, because similar to the Everton away kit, where it's got like a background colour that's peeking through, like an Airtex design, so you see like a subtle secondary colour behind the main one. We've done that on the away shirt, where we've got black shirts, but you've got little dots of amber peeking through. And then we pair the plain black shorts of the home kit with the away kit, and you just see these two massively contrasting blacks, where one is made from a fire, is made to look slightly shimmery brownish, and then you've got these black shorts. I just thought that was poorly done. And I also don't think the amber of the shorts, sorry, the socks on the home kit matches the amber of the shirt. So although I like the design idea, I do think Umbro have made a bit of a dog's dinner of the execution this season.
So it sounds like a production issue perhaps there, with the socks.
Yeah. And I think that's because when we got into the playoffs last season, I think we'd last year we used the 2014-15 amber alternate shorts. We used them the following season, but because they would have needed different fonts for the short numbers, the league fonts rather than the Premier League fonts, I think at some point we just ran out of them. And so we played at Derby in the league with the amber with black pinstripes home shirt, but with the away kits white shorts and socks, and it looked a mess. It just didn't work. It would have made perhaps have worked if it would have been a striped shirt, but it just didn't. So we asked Umbro to rush out some more alternate amber shorts, and we wore those at Derby in the semi-final first leg of the playoffs. So I think Umbro produced this season's shorts and socks early, perhaps even before they'd fully finished designing the shirt. And I think that's the production where they don't match up, where the ambers aren't right and the blacks aren't right.
Yeah, that's a pity. I mean, what you mentioned with the shirt, it's the away shirt, isn't it, that's black with the amber peeking through, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it looks great as a shirt, but as a kit it falls down.
But that confuses me a little bit, because that seems like it would either be fantastic for or compromise performance technology. Is it actually a mesh over another sort of a plain, solid design? Is that how it works? What's the formulation of the shirt there?
It doesn't feel like, you know, there's distinct layers that you can sort of rub it and feel them rubbing against each other. I just think they've managed to get a very thin layer underneath it. I think you could have made the shorts of the same material and they wouldn't suddenly be any heavier than a standard pair of shorts. I just think it's a lack of forethought rather than...
Yeah,
you know, they've done it for performance. I don't believe it would have affected performance at all.
Yeah, because there's two schools of thought there, because Nike at the minute, especially for the players' shorts and shirt, their whole thing is that they're made out of the same material, so the shirt stretches and the shorts stretch in the same way. So there's no contrast between the way the two items are made. But Adidas are actually doing exactly the opposite in terms of the look, because they're making the shorts a darker colour, I think, than the shirt. So it's similar to what you mentioned with the whole kit there. So Manchester United's, I think, is it away? Is it the blue one? It might be the away or the third. But they're two different colours. And Austin Long, who does the Soccer Nomad podcast, I spoke to him a little while ago, and he was bemoaning that fact for the Manchester United kit, that the shirt and shorts didn't match in much the same way. There is another kit we haven't mentioned, isn't there?
There is.
The whole this season. What's that like?
That's the very recently released third kit, which has the fantastic colour description of cactus purple. Now, I always thought cactuses or cacti were green, but I did put cactus purple into Google, and yep, sure enough, there are cacti that are purple. But... it's a very bright and vivid purple, certainly not referential to the purple kit we had in 1999-2000, which was a very deep, very regal purple. And yeah, a lot of people have really not liked it. I think they think it looks quite feminine. The kit man mentioned to me that the players aren't too keen on it. And the first time we wore it, we got beat 6-1 at Bournemouth, so that's never going to endear a kit to people. If one, they're a bit unsure of it anyway, and then you get absolutely pagged in an away game. And I felt sorry for the club's media staff, who the Monday after that mauling on the Saturday, you know, said, well, it's in the club shop on the 22nd, I'm sure you love it and you're going to be buying it. And they just came in for a lot of tweeted derision.
I remember when England released an away shirt, I think it was around 2011-ish, maybe. And the way they launched it, you always used to do strange launches. So they launched an away shirt by Kasabian wearing it on stage in Paris. That was another bright idea. But for this one, it was a navy away shirt, and they had David Haye wear it when he was fighting Vladimir Klitschko. And it wasn't David Haye's best night, but that was the starting point for that England shirt as well, that he was moaning about his toe.
It's always, yeah, it's always sad when it gets equated to something dreadfully happening. It's funny, Hull City did something similar in a very low-key version, because when we released the last season, the 2015-16 away shirt, we did so by getting the Olympic boxer Luke Campbell to walk to the ring in it. That's how we launched that shirt. But he won that fight, so, you know, there was no bad connotations about it afterward.
Okay, so just something I'd like to know, and I was speaking to Dennis Hurley the other day, and if I've kept this in, he's allowed me to keep it in, but he said that he was a football fan, I think maybe a sports fan first and foremost, and then a kit fan. Now, I probably would say you are as well, because you're obviously very passionate about Hull and go to see them and so on. Now, Would that be correct? Would you put your love of the club before your love of kits?
I think so. I mean, I'd definitely say that I'm both. But I find as time goes on, I become the latter more than the former. I think as I get older, I get more and more disillusioned with the modern game, the sort of obsession with money, the egotistical owners running rampant. And so my love for modern football's really taken a battering. And I feel like the actions of Hull City's owners over the last couple of years, I mean, even now they won't call the club Hull City. Whenever you see the market, the club, they call them the Tigers. Mm. You know, it's never, you know, when they'll do like a Twitter photo, it's never Bournemouth 6 Hull City 1, it's Bournemouth 6 the Tigers 1. They just refuse to use either Hull or City, which really frustrates me. And so I've sort of been using the past and the club's history as a bit of a refuge, and that's how I've sort of kept the fire burning of my love for the club, by sort of putting my attention onto, well, did we really wear white in our first kit in 1904, as everybody believes? You know, why did we wear blue kits after the Second World War? And so that's what I've thrown myself into, is sort of researching those things. And it's helped me keep my love for the club alive when the current owners are really testing that to the limit.
Okay, so you have a huge basis of knowledge of historical kits worn by Hull City. So that lends itself to you having an idea of what the ideal Hull City kit would be, which you demonstrated, I think, on a Skillshare project that was run by Stuart Scott Curran, I think. It's still available. I think you can still get to that website and view your project on there where you designed this kit. Describe it for us. What was it like? What did you come up with?
I love that project. That was a great deal of fun. What I chose to do for that one is I wanted to honour Hull City's chairman in the 1980s. Hull City went into receivership in 1980, and the family that were running the club at the time had just sort of lost interest in it. So a man called Don Robinson came in, and he'd previously been Scarborough's owner as they'd risen up the non-leagues, and he came to Hull City, and he was a bit of a showman. He was a former professional wrestler. He owned the Flamingoland sort of theme park, who incidentally sponsored Hull City last season. I thought that was a nice retro touch, even if it is a bit cheap and tacky. And he brought an infectious enthusiasm to the club. Like, he had us play Tampa Bay Rowdies, and he rode around the pitch dressed as a cowboy and a horse. And one of the things he did was he made red a third trim colour, which I wasn't fond of at the time, because I always figured that the only red you see on a tiger is if it's been shot. But his response was, no, it represents the blood the players are prepared to shed in the name of the club. I'm not quite sure I bought that, but for like the entire decade he was at the club, we had red as a third colour. And so I wanted to incorporate red into a striped kit, because during the 80s we didn't wear striped shirts at all. We wore largely plain amber with black and with some red. So I wanted to see how we could incorporate the red into a traditional striped shirt and see how it looked. And I also wanted to reference a ludicrous phrase he said, when he said, I want Hull City to be the first club to play on the moon. And he was well known for bombastic sayings like this. But, you know, the man was beloved. I mean, he took us from the fourth division to the second division. And there was even a couple of seasons where we were vaguely challenging for contention for the top division. So he sort of revived the club from top to bottom. And he certainly made watching Hull City a lot of fun. So I wanted to sort of honour him. So the way I did it was to have thick black and amber stripes, but with a red pinstripe parting each black and each amber stripe. And that was a reference to the red pinstripes that were in two shirts. One were from 82 to 84, and then we revamped that shirt when everyone was having shiny shadow stripes, and we basically brought out the same shirt but a much shinier version with shiny shadow stripes. So that was my thinking. And I also want in the club's crest on on a circular patch with sort of the moon on it, and I thought about Manchester United's retro reflective patch from the Champions League shirts they had in 99, so I went with something similar. And on the back we had white numbers, and it had sort of like a cratered moon effect. So it was a bit of a hat tip to a very popular former chairman who really breathed new life into the club into the 80s.
And sorry, the socks. What were the socks?
I mean, I love hoop socks. I'd been campaigning for the club to have hoop socks for a long time. And when we did have them for the 2013-14 season, a couple of people mentioned on Twitter, that's probably just to shut you up. But we got to the FA Cup final in hoop socks, so they were seen around the world. So, yeah, I also wanted to have hoop socks because we did have hoop socks in 84-85 where the hoops were amber, black and red alternating. But I went with a similar design that on the shirt, so you had amber and black hoops but with a red, I suppose it's a pin hoop rather than a pin stripe, separating each of the hoops.
It's definitely worth having a look at, and there's a lot of projects on there, and there a lot of them are quite interesting, so it's worth going
there is
and having a look.
One of them was done by Mark Parling, who is also a Hull City fan, and because I was so impressed by his illustrations, I've asked him to... I'm doing an exhibition at one of the museums in Hull next year, and I've asked him to do some of the design work to sort of tie it all together. But for that project, he designed a shirt for the Dutch club PEC Zwolle, because I think he has some relatives that live in Holland. And so he took a stab at redesigning Zwolle's kits, and I thought he did an amazing job.
So tell us more about this exhibition.
Yeah, next year, 2017, Hull is the UK City of Culture. And if anybody's sniggering at that, you should stop. It's a city that's got a lot to offer. And because I knew that, because the owners despise Hull Council and they see the City of Culture year as being a council-led thing, I knew that Hull City weren't going to get involved in it. And they really haven't been involved in any significant way whatsoever. And I didn't like this because... culture isn't just art and theatre, it's what people do, and what a lot of people do is support the local sports team. And I thought the culture of the football club was just as important to the culture of the city as any of the art projects that go on. So I just thought I'll have a go myself. If the club aren't going to do it, I'll see what I can do. And I put in a pitch to one of the museums, and I just said, can I use your community space to have a modest exhibition of player worn shirts? And I also put a cheeky bid in for some funding, just to fund things like mannequins, advertising, some design, PVC banners telling the history of the club's kit design. And the City of Culture team absolutely loved it, so I've been really enthused at the response. In fact, a couple of weeks ago they had the launch, and they've got 60 what they call creative communities projects where they've got a little bit of funding to put something on. So it's not all stuff like the Turner Prize and exhibitions and theatres. The local population are doing little things as well, and each group was given 60 seconds, and there was even a gong if they went over the 60 seconds, to just basically say what the project was. And I was the 60th person to speak, and there was people from Sierra Leone saying, if it hadn't have been for the Hull politician William Wilberforce's work to abolish slavery, I would have still been a slave in Sierra Leone. There were some midwives that were saying they were going to take a plaster cast of the feet of every child born in Hull in 2017 and have a mural. And everything was really high art, or it really, you know, had some social impact. And I was dreading the microphone coming to me because I was thinking, I'm a fraud. I'm going to talk about, well, I'm putting on a display of some gaudy polyester. But I wanted to make the point that around the world, the colours of Hull, they see black and amber. And I gave the anecdote of when I was in Chicago in 2013, I was wearing a 2008-09 Hull City home shirt. I was buying a burger when I heard this local guy shout, "Hull City suck!" Now, I didn't appreciate the sentiment, obviously, but it did sort of say to me that, hang on a minute, some bloke in Chicago knows that Hull City wear black and amber, and that's what made me think that the colours of the club, and the club has got a cultural place and a heritage in the city, and so I just wanted to do an exhibition that spoke about that and celebrated it.
Hmm. I mean, Hull City might suck, but they could beat Chicago Fire, I would have thought.
Yeah, although we signed Maloney from Chicago Fire, and he's been pretty dreadful so far, so maybe, maybe not, we'll see.
Mm. Celtic legend of sorts. Now, that, I mean, I agree with what you're saying there, and when is the exhibition then? What are the dates for that?
We've managed to time it perfectly. It's going to start on July the 3rd and it's going to run till the end of September. So that period will cover sort of the start of pre-season and the start of the season. So hopefully the club will have new owners by then who might want to get on board with us and promote it quite heavily. But there's certainly been a good response. Some of the local radio stations have been in touch, and lots of people, you know, people just stopping me and saying, what a great idea, I definitely want to come and see that. I mean, these two blokes from Sierra Leone, they ran over to me at the end of the this introduction session. So we're desperate to come and see your kit display. We think that's going to be really good. And I'm just thinking, hang on a minute, you're honouring a man who pioneered the abolition of slavery, and you're impressed by my idea. But it just shows you that, you know, kits mean a lot of things to people.
Yeah, all football will do that, won't it? The other thing is that what you mentioned about the city being tied to the club, and people will forget this, but in 2010, just before Labour went out of power, one of their policies was to have clubs tied in with the local area in some way. And I don't know what the programmes were at the time, but it was community programmes, a bigger push with community programmes. And obviously that didn't work out because other people took charge, but that's democracy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, that's Hull City. This is something I've learned about you more recently, is that you're also a Sampdoria fan, is that right?
I am, yes. In fact, this weekend I was at the Derby della Lanterna when Sampdoria beat Genoa 2-1, which was very satisfying.
Now, to paraphrase Vinny and the Stars, we've already established that you're not from Italia, you're from Hull.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why Sampdoria?
Well, with an English side, I feel I have to support my local team. But when it comes to picking teams overseas, I go for the kits, pure and simple. As an example, in the mid-90s, I went to a branch of All Sports and they were selling one of the neon yellow Borussia Dortmund shirts. I bought it, and so I sort of adopted them my team. And with Sampdoria, it's the colours and the kits primarily. I just adore Sampdoria's look, the blue with the bands, and I love the consistency at which they apply it. I know sometimes people think all of their kits look the same, but they're real sticklers for maintaining that look, and the fans are sticklers about it too. They're really proud of it, and I just think the kit, Sampdoria's blue banded look, is beautiful.
So just the kit, that's What's the deal with Italy then? You've started supporting Sampdoria because you like the kit, but you also speak Italian, don't you?
I've sort of picked some up, yeah. I wouldn't say that I was fluent. I mean, I suppose I'm a man of a certain age where the first time I ever saw foreign football that wasn't in European UEFA competition or a World Cup or a European Championship was when Channel 4 started showing Serie A, and I think that had a massive impact on me, you know, because I was watching Hull City in a dilapidated ground in the lower leagues, and then suddenly you was watching this incredible football in a lot of stadiums rebuilt for the Italian anti-World Cup. The best players in the world were heading to Italy, and it just felt the most exotic brand of football I'd ever seen. And that point was Sampdoria's pomp. And I think the first ever game that was shown live was Sampdoria 3, Napoli 3. And I remember Attilio Lombardo having an incredible game. You know, this ridiculously thin but fast, ostrich-like, bald man. You know, just everything about the aesthetics of Italian football was really captivating, especially the kits. I don't think there's any league where there's such a breadth of unique and instantly recognisable kits from the two Milan clubs to Roma to Napoli and Sampdoria, because that's the one that grabbed my attention.
Dennis Hurley on, I think it's on the Pride in the Jersey website. No, it's not Pride in the Jersey. It's on Museum of Jerseys. I think it's museumofjerseys.com probably. He covered all of the kits that Italian teams wore. Now, I should know this, but it's either 1990-91 or 91-92, and he says that is the standard for football kits. Everything should be checked against that, really. That is the high point. And obviously one of the most iconic Samp kits would be that 1990-91 is when they won the Scudetto, is that right?
Yeah, so the following year they had the tricolour triangle on the shirts, and it had the classic ERG sponsor. Yeah, I think that's the archetypal Sampdoria shirt. I think that should be your number 49 in the best 50 kits ever. You've got my permission to change it.
We'll change that. Yeah, that is that. What it is, one of the criticisms we got when we were doing that is that we didn't put a Sampdoria kit in there. And I have to go with the opinion that they all look the same.
I'm not having it.
But I never want to utter that as someone who considers himself a football kit geek. I never want to say that, because that is something that people who don't care about football kits will say. It looks the same as last season's. But Sampdoria, the thing that makes a Sampdoria shirt great is the thing that is carried over every season. Or would you dispute that?
No, not at all. I mean, sometimes they'll make the bands a little bit thinner, sometimes they'll have them higher and the sponsor below, but for all intents and purposes it is the same shirt every season. It's a blue shirt with a red band and a black band inside, a white band with the St. George cross in the middle of it. You're right, they are the same, but that means they're beautiful every season.
Well, if it's not broke. I mean, this season's Samp shirt is the away shirt, isn't it? It's the white one. That one's done something slightly different with the bands. Is that controversial because they sort of fade out, don't they? How does it work?
Some people found it controversial. Although some people found the year previous is away shirt more controversial. But no, what they've done with this one is, They've made the bands look sort of like hand drawn or painted, and they sort of fade out. And I like it. I think it's if you're making the observation that every kit can look exactly the same, then how do you make it different? And I think that's a really innovative way of doing it. And although some people didn't like that this year, a lot of people didn't like the last year's white away shirt, which was pure white with just the St. George's cross shield in the middle. And a lot of people were saying, well, where are the bands? You know, the bands should be on the away kit as well. But if you look at Sampdoria's past, the initial Sampdoria away kits were just white with the St. George's cross. So they've certainly got reason to go to that again. But that shirt in its pure whiteness was more controversial than the sort of painted style bands of this year. But I like both of them.
I think they have a little bit more, or they feel they have a little bit more license to play around with the bands on chain shirts than they do maybe on the home shirt. I think if they did that with the home shirt, that might be more controversial.
I think it would be, yeah. I think some Pair fans, when it comes to kits, are a very, very conservative bunch. But what I did think was ridiculous was, I do like the third shirt of Sampdoria this year. It's like a light blue. The crest isn't the regular crest that looks like a Yorkshire Terrier smoking a pipe, but is actually the profile of a sailor. It's got the patch that's more regularly seen on like the coach's blazer jacket, but it was a crest that was used in the 50s and 60s. And I think there's a light blue shirt. It's beautiful, and they wore it against Juventus last night. But the problem is, when they played Pescara a couple of weeks ago, Pescara wear light blue and white striped home shirts. Well, Sampdoria's blue home shirt clashed, Sampdoria's white away shirt clashed, and Sampdoria's pale blue third shirt clashed. So poor Pescara were forced to wear their yellow away kits at home to sort of make up for the fact that Samp haven't got a kit that works when you're playing a team in blue and white stripes, which is a ridiculous oversight.
I don't understand why there is such a thing as an oversight. We moan about this all the time, kit clashes. There should always be a fourth kit there. Just put it out there, and then if you win the game, you get to sell it as well. You just release it as a kit, and then it's normally a win-win situation.
One thing I like about Sampdoria is the goalkeepers often wear outfield players' kits. They'll just wear an alternate one. So if they're playing away in their away kit, the keeper might wear the home shirt or something like that. But this year, they have brought out a specific goalkeeper jersey, which is orange with blue pinstripes. And it's quite nice, and Viviano's worn it a couple of times. But what they could have done is just printed up, 20 of those and had that as an impromptu fourth kit. It just needed the foresight, but sadly that's sometimes lacking from people whose profession is to make sure that the team they outfit is distinct from the other.
Olympique Marseille did that once in the 2007-2008 season. They wore their third shirt, which is my favourite football shirt of all time, but they wore it with the third goalkeeper kit, shorts and socks, because the standard shorts and socks. And they actually, for the third kit, they had blue shorts as standard. They also had orange chain shorts, and that was still deemed too much of a clash, I think. So they wore the navy goalkeeper shorts and socks, which is not many people would have noticed that, but you know.
Challenging, John Devlin would call that.
Let's end on a John Devlin note. Okay, Les, that has been fantastic. Thank you so much for talking to me. I wish you all the luck in the world regarding the name and the owners and just football on pitch exploits, apart from obviously when they're playing against Liverpool. Where are you in the league at the minute?
We're third from bottom, and the situation's getting more precarious by the week.
Phelan is now the proper manager, is he?
He's the head coach. So that would imply he's not in charge of making signings. So we've really strung out permanently appointing, and then when we did, we only give him till the end of the season, and we give him the head coach role, which I suppose is very Italian, but seems a little bit disingenuous towards the man.
But he was doing so well when he was just like a caretaker, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe we should go back to that, because the season's certainly taken a precipitous drop, and I don't see it improving anytime soon.
Hopefully things will change again. Now, on social media, how can we get hold of you?
Primarily, if we're talking about kits, I mainly do that on the Hull City Kits Twitter feed, which is just simply at Hull City Kits.
Okay, and is there a Facebook page?
There is, yeah. There's a Facebook page which doesn't quite get as updated as often as the Twitter feed.
Yeah, well, welcome to my world. yeah, so get hold of Les on that. He's a mine of knowledge, so that's very useful. If you want to speak to me on Twitter, I'm J29ers. Designfootball.com is also on Twitter. There's a designfootball.com Facebook page. And obviously go to the website, designfootball.com. There are plenty of Hull City kits on there, so go and check those out as well. I'm not sure whether Les would be a fan, but possibly. Oh, I tweeted you one the other day, didn't I? Did you
yeah,
like that one?
I did. I quite liked it. I thought it was innovatively done. I would have accepted that one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Good to hear whoever designed that one. Okay. Well, thanks again then, Les. And I'll speak to you soon. And soon we will have someone else on this podcast. And that will hopefully be enjoyable also. So, bye-bye now. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.